Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a Dhamma talk from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey. If you find benefit from this talk, please support the restoration, the preservation, and the presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma with your donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
So today's class is from the second chapter of the Dhammapada, and it's a teaching on the refined mindfulness that the Buddha taught. The modern applications of what is called mindfulness is often institutionalized mindlessness, meaning it's holding in mind things that have nothing to do with the Dhamma. And that's not good or bad. It's just to be recognized as mindfulness not applied to the Dhamma. The Buddha taught mindfulness in a very specific way, and this little chapter points directly to that. The Buddha taught Four Noble Truths as a way of recognizing and abandoning ignorance of those four truths. And the path that he taught is the Eightfold Path, and he taught no other path except that. And so the mindfulness, or the refined mindfulness that the Buddha teaches, is to be hold in mind, to be mindful of the Eightfold Path as the path to recognizing and abandoning all forms of ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And so anything else that we hold in mind at times might be valuable. In fact, you could say even important to live in the world. It's good to be mindful of driving when you're actually driving a car. But that type of mindfulness has nothing to do with the Dhamma, except it's appropriate when it's appropriate. While driving a car and being mindful of what's necessary to drive a car without hurting yourself or others is important. But while we're doing that, we can also hold in mind the framework of the Eightfold Path to inform everything that we're doing. And that's refined mindfulness. And it's refined mindfulness that then is supporting the mundane mindfulness of everyday life. In other words, as we're driving safely and with confidence, we're also not losing our minds over people that aren't driving the same way, because we've established the Eightfold Path within the midst of the chaotic nature of the world. And that's, I hope I gave you a useful metaphor using the driving. But that's the type of refined mindfulness that the Buddha teaches that then supports our moment-by-moment life in a calm and peaceful manner. Excuse me. The Appamadivaga, from the second chapter of the Dhammapada, the Buddha's words. Mindfulness is the path to cessation. So right away, we need to know a little bit about the Dhamma before we can use even that first sentence, but we do know. Mindfulness of what? Mindfulness of the Eightfold Path is the path to cessation. Cessation of what? We know the general theme of the Buddha's Dhamma is ending ignorance of Four Noble Truths. So mindfulness is the path to cessation of ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Those mindful do not suffer. That's pointing to the fourth foundation of mindfulness, the fourth quality of mind, which is a mind that is resting in equanimity no matter what's occurring. You often hear me refer to that as saying we gain the ability to maintain a calm and peaceful mind no matter what's occurring, no matter how unpeaceful our circumstances might be. This, what's occurring right now, is simply a good example of being able to maintain mindfulness no matter what expressions of greed, aversion, and deluded thinking are emerging in the world. We understand the nature of what's occurring, so we don't lose our minds over it. We maintain a calm presence. And if the world needs anything more, I don't know what it is except a calm presence. The Buddha continues, those mindful have gone beyond suffering. And that's not just an individual statement. Those mindful have gone beyond suffering themselves because they don't, no longer react, and we no longer contribute to the suffering in the world. That's the key to establishing peace on the planet. It's likely not going to happen, and it's not the point of the Buddha's Dhamma. The only reason I'm saying that is there's many, many people who are critically or vitally aware of the need for peace today. The problem is we don't know how to do it. because our minds are still rooted in ignorance. And so while this is a great opportunity for change in the world, and change is certainly taking place right now, those of us that have developed a refined mindfulness at the Buddhist teaching can help establish a peace that is more authentic and unwavering. The more that peace in the world is established in wisdom rather than greed, aversion, and deluded thinking by reacting, the more it will actually be peace and will actually contribute to peace. And who knows if that's going to take place, but the only way that we can contribute to it is on an individual basis. Not by hoping, not by insisting that other people change, but by changing ourselves. And that's the wisdom that comes from the Dhamma. It doesn't mean that we should look down on other people that aren't developing this type of wisdom. The right view is to realize how fortunate we are as individuals to understand this, to be able to develop this type of profound mindfulness that the Buddha is teaching here today. The Buddha continues. Clearly knowing the excellence of mindfulness, mindfulness of the Eightfold Path, the wise, exulting in that mindfulness, and the refuge of the they exult in the refuge. Sorry, let me read it again. The wise, exulting in mindfulness, and the refuge of the noble ones, meaning the refuge of the noble ones is the Eightfold Path. The wise ones establish in jhana, steadfast in the heart, would establish in a well-concentrated mind and steadfast, holding, because of that concentration, able to hold in mind the heartwood of the Dhamma. When the Buddha is referring to heartwood, he's always referring to the Eightfold Path. Excuse me. Steadfast in the heartwood, they alone are released. Freedom beyond compare. Release from ignorance and freedom beyond compare. The Buddha is stating, an awakened human being is stating that those of us that love our individual freedom will free our minds, because that's a freedom that is beyond compare. It's also a freedom that cannot be challenged by changing worldly conditions or the people in the world. It's maintaining steadfastness of the Eightfold Path through jhana meditation, through a well-concentrated mind that now knows what to hold in mind, what to be mindful of. Freedom beyond compare. Glorious are those, energetic, pure, discerning rightly, restrained, and always mindful. Mindful of what? Mindful of right effort. A disciple of the heartwood, the wise, the wise are an island unto themselves, that no flood or virus or protest or rioting can overwhelm. What an incredible statement. Mindful of right effort. Remember the sixth factor of the Eightfold Path, right effort, is, and being mindful of right effort, is really holding in mind the importance of maintaining integration of the Eightfold Path. That's right effort. Mindful of right effort, a disciple of heartwood, disciple of the Eightfold Path, the wise are an island unto themselves that no flood can overwhelm. I think that's one of the most powerful statements among many that Siddhartha Gautama ever made. Because he's saying what he's referring to, the fourth foundation of mindfulness that is maintained in a calm and peaceful way, not through grim determination, but through gentle courage and understanding. There's no grasping left in that mind. So when something emerges in the world like it is today, or something very subtle as an unpleasant conversation with someone, we know where it's coming from. And we don't lose our minds over the unpleasant conversation or mass riots. It's all the same thing, because we understand the manifestations of ignorance. If I'm reacting to the world because I don't like the way someone said something, I've lost my mind, and I can reclaim it through the Eightfold Path. If I'm rooted in fear because of what's arising in the world, the result or the resolution is the same. I take a breath, I unite my mind back in my body, and I look out onto the world from right view, a view resting in the wisdom developed through right mindfulness, refined mindfulness. And then there's nothing in the world, there's no condition or no person in the world that can threaten my mindfulness, my calm resolve. The Buddha continues, The foolish and ignorant crave mindlessness. And the type of mindlessness that the foolish and the ignorant crave is often seen by them as mindfulness. Mindfulness means to hold in mind or to recollect. So the default position for a mind rooted in ignorance is to grasp after and justify fear and call that mindfulness. But it's mindless because it's holding on to things that do not relate to the Eightfold Path. So again, that person might be holding in mind while they're driving a car. Hold on, excuse me. It looks like Laura is joining us. Yep. Good morning, Laura. I lost my train of thought. Let me go back a little bit and I'll just pick it back up. The foolish and ignorant crave mindlessness. So what the Buddha is referring to is a type of mindfulness that is grasping onto fabricated views, not what is established through the heart within the Dhamma. The foolish and ignorant crave mindlessness. The wise know this one treasure. What is the one treasure? Refined mindfulness. Applying concentration to the principles that develop profound right view and a calm and peaceful mind. Mindlessness is holding in mind, the Buddha's words, that's my commentary, excuse me. The Buddha's words, refrain from mindlessness, refrain from sensual pleasure. Only those established in jhana and refined mindfulness attain lasting calm. That last sentence could be seen as a reference to the entire Eightfold Path. The eighth factor of jhana meditation and then the other seven factors are what are to be held in mind and become possible to hold in mind because of deepening concentration. Excuse me for a moment. So I think every one of you, is Dr. Tim still with us? Yeah, he is. No, he's not. Yes, he is. It's not Dr. Tim. Dr. Kevin I was referring to. He refers to this in a very skillful way about how in the beginning of Dhamma practice, even something as simple as the Eightfold Path and remembering what each factor of that is, right view, right intention, etc., is very difficult for all of us. I remember when I first came across the Eightfold Path, I couldn't even remember exactly what the right factors were, nothing else about it. But even to keep those straight was difficult for a couple of years. I had to keep coming back to the Dhamma before even the reference, the overall reference to the Eightfold Path was well integrated into my mind. Now, of course, I would bet we all could rattle off what the eight factors of the Eightfold Path, which doesn't necessarily mean we've completely integrated it. But that's the way it is. That's we first come to something that we never knew about, we're ignorant of. And through Dhamma practice, we gain wisdom. And developing that mind who had no understanding at all of what an Eightfold Path is to the minds that we have developed now that can use the Eightfold Path as moment-by-moment reference is Dhamma practice. There is no other Dhamma practice than what we're talking about right here. This is the refined mindfulness. This is what we hold in mind as Dhamma practitioners. This is what I'm always referring to, by the way, as it's not that. It might be something that is seemingly altruistic or compassionate. Holding in mind the desire for world peace is certainly something every human being should try to generate. But to insist that we have world peace before I can have a calm and peaceful mind is rooted in ignorance, isn't it? And as we develop the Dhamma, it's easily seen in this particular scenario that the more mindful I am, the more refined mindfulness I have developed, the more that I can contribute to the one thing that I really want, which is world peace. The problem might be that if I don't recognize that, I'm going to go about that in a way that is not profitable, or meaning that it's not at least as effective as it could be, because there's still remnants of ignorance that will have to manifest. There's one thing that is certain about the world, and it's because the world is the way it is that ignorance will always show its face, one way or another. And so if it's our ignorance, we'll know it. How do we recognize our own ignorance? Through right speech, right action, and right livelihood. The Buddha gave us that framework. The same is true in the world. How do we recognize ignorance? Look at the speech and look at the actions and look at the, some of the things that people do to maintain their livelihood. And in that way, we can really see ignorance manifesting and the greed, aversion, and deluded thinking that is underlying that ignorance. And again, it doesn't mean that people that act in ignorance are bad or evil or anything. It simply means that they're lacking understanding of Four Noble Truths. And we understand that. Let me continue. Only those established in jhana and refined mindfulness attain lasting calm, the fourth foundation of mindfulness. The wise, looking down from the mountaintop of wisdom, I love that line, the mountaintop of wisdom, having abandoned mindlessness, established in mindfulness, this peaceful sage, I can't read it, observes the foolish and suffering. I gotta read it again. I'm having a little trouble picking up the words right here. This peaceful sage observes the foolish and suffering multitude from the mountaintop. Sorry, I messed that up. Mindful among the mindless, awake among the asleep, the wise advance like a swift horse. I mean, advance to what? Advance to their understanding. By mindfulness is one exalted. Mindfulness is always praised by the wise. Mindlessness is always despised. The Dhamma practitioner who delights in mindfulness and is fearful of mindlessness advances like a fire burning away all the fetters. The Dhamma practitioner who delights in mindfulness and is fearful of mindlessness will not lose the way. It's the one thing we need to be mindful of and fearless of is losing our minds. That's why I refer to every time that we reunite our mind and our body through taking a breath and being mindful of that is ending that particular mindlessness that was previously present in that moment. And it's as simple as that. And that opportunity for refined mindfulness is present in each and every one of us in each and every moment of our lives. It's our choice. Excuse me. But it's not the choice of someone who doesn't know. It's not the choice. Refined mindfulness is not the choice of someone who doesn't know. How could it be? How could you know where to direct your mind and what to hold in mind until you've learned what to direct your mind towards and what it is to hold in mind? This is the this is the big problem with what the Buddha taught. Because it's not taken on faith. It's not enough to just believe in the God Buddha and we're good to go, or to pray to all the Buddhas, or to worship the Buddha, or to chant the Buddha's name. None of that will change anything, will it? It might distract from the fact that in this moment I don't know what I'm doing because I've lost my mind, but it doesn't deliver anything, does it? In order to develop the Eightfold Path, in order to develop a calm and peaceful mind, the curriculum must be followed. If you want to graduate. If you don't want to graduate, you don't got to bother with the curriculum. And that's an individual choice. Those that want to maintain mindlessness in whatever way are free to do so. Those that want to develop the mindfulness as the Buddha describes mindfulness, do it through the Eightfold Path. And that's the only path the Buddha ever taught. I'm going to go back one line just to feed the next line. The Dhamma practitioner who delights in mindfulness and is fearful of mindlessness will not lose the way. They are close to release. Notice the Buddha is not putting any other qualification on being close to release except maintaining the way, holding in mind the factors of the Eightfold Path so that we do not lose the way. If we are doing that, and we all are doing it, by the way, right now, we will not lose the way. So the only way that we can lose the way is to lose mindfulness of the Eightfold Path. And all that we have to do to not do that is to continue with jhana meditation and incorporating the Eightfold Path, just like we are doing day by day, moment by moment, since we all came to the Dhamma. We're doing it right now, participating in the Sangha, and we're doing it outside of class out of our Zoom rooms by our daily meditation practice and our recollection, our mindfulness of the Eightfold Path in our moment-by-moment life at the point of contact. All those suttas and those classes on practicing restraint at the point of contact is what we're talking about here too. But again, over and over again, excuse me. This is not something new, is it? In fact, it's something that we learned right from the beginning. The first thing we did as Dhamma practitioners is learn jhana meditation. Why? Because even the first breath of jhana meditation is the beginning of bringing our minds into this present moment where we can now practice a Dhamma. And in this now, I bring in my understanding of the entire Eightfold Path, and I'm able to apply it in whatever capacity I can in this moment. And the capacity of wisdom is not important. What's important is the right effort and continued right intention. And that will grow our capacity of what's occurring. And I'm using capacity right now to refer to right view. Because right view is something, it's like a, it's like a large vessel that we can drip in our understandings of the Eightfold Path until the vessel becomes full. And then we no longer have to concern ourselves with it because we have fully integrated it. And we are living mindfulness as the Buddha taught, the refined mindfulness of the Eightfold Path. Let me just finish this. They are close to release. One more thing about that. As long as we are on the path, we are close to release. And that informs another aspect of right view, to stop thinking about when. Where's the end to all this? Because we're missing an important point of the Dhamma that will stop us from getting there. It's being fully present right here and right now. So even in the consideration that, oh, when am I going to get there, is a distraction. And it's best seen as a distraction and not as desire. Because then we can take the distraction from when am I going to get there and simply bring it back into this moment and look at what's occurring. What's occurring right now is my mind is disturbed and distracted because I haven't yet awakened. But what am I doing in this moment? I'm working towards that awakening. That's why it's a foolish thought to think about where I'm going. It's part of the Dhamma to think about where I am, right here and right now. It's enough for me to know that I have taken true refuge in the Dhamma. This is where true refuge gives us the confidence to continue. Because I understand that a human being awakened. I'm not sure who that is. I didn't catch the name, so I might have to. Oh, it's Karen. Hello, Karen. It's good to see you. So, in that moment, we have the opportunity, just as the Buddha said here, and just as we talk about, to practice the refined mindfulness of holding in mind the Eightfold Path. And it's another clear section of the Dhammapada or the Sutta that just reminds us of this. There's nothing all that terribly deep and profound about this, except the reminder, hey, this is what we're doing. This clear teaching from 2,600 years ago, or this type of teaching, is always so inspiring to me. I just think it's so remarkable that this human being's voice is still so strong and clear after all these years and all the attempts at corrupting this beautiful teaching. They are close to release. I wasn't sure if that was the last line, but I wanted to emphasize that. That's how the Buddha concludes this. They are close to mindfulness, that refined mindfulness, we are all close to release. Thank you for listening to the sutta today. I won't go to Karen first because he just dropped in on us. So let me start down here with, who is that? It's Laura. Hello, Laura.
Okay, hello everyone.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm just going to listen for a little bit. I probably am going to pop off before everyone's done speaking, but yeah, I just really appreciate the simplicity of, you know, the right effort and the right view as kind of a anchor in the path when you feel like maybe you're losing sight. That's it.
Thanks for joining, Laura. Hi to all the Branhams. How are you, Kevin?
Good, John.
Good to see you.
Thank you. This is a great teaching. And it just brings out, you know, true mindfulness as opposed to like pop culture mindfulness, which you hear every day, 20 times a day at least.
Yeah.
And speaking to people, and, you know, it's hard not to want to try to correct them, but I think they're trying in their own way.
Yeah.
But this is the true way.
Yeah. Well said. You know, that they're the best way we can teach other people to refine mindfulness of the Buddha's Dhamma is to be an example of it, because most people won't want to hear it in the way that we would present it anyway. It takes a little bit of understanding to know what the Buddha's referring to here and what we're referring to as well. It takes a little effort. So, please can't see. Jen, how are you this morning?
Hi, everybody. Hi, John.
Good to see you.
It's good to see everybody. Is this our last Saturday on Zoom?
Oh, it's a good question. No, we will always we'll be in Frenchtown next Saturday, but we will be streaming the classes as we always do, too.
Yeah.
So I encourage you to come to class as long as you feel comfortable coming, but we'll still, as usual, we'll always have our classes on Zoom, too. So,
this is a lovely sutta. I mean, every single line was just like a little nugget that you could just take and use to, you know, remember, apply at any point.
Yeah.
So I really liked it. And mindful among the mindless, awake among those asleep, the wise advance like a swift horse. You know, that really encompasses everything that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And this, even the stuff that Kevin referred to, you know, it just really comes down to we have to focus on ourselves and awaken, and that is the answer, that is the
yeah.
path to advancing like a swift horse, or to being skillful in your life, or
yeah.
to, you know, helping others to see the path to awakening, you know. So it's just great sutta, great little sutta.
Yeah, it is. Thank you, Jen. It's so helpful in keeping us focused, isn't it? It's just that. It's the, you know, we developed the Eightfold Path, and that idea of the metaphor of the swift horse, it also informs us, if it feels like our Dhamma practice is dragging, like we mentioned, that we're not getting there quick enough, or are we doing it correctly? Just come back to the Eightfold Path, because that's the answer. Even as wonderful as a meditation teacher as I am, a Dhamma teacher, can only point the way. And that's one of the great benefits of the Buddha's Dhamma, is as soon as we start applying ourselves authentically to it, we then become our own guidance through our own enthusiasm, as the Buddha talks about, that joyful enthusiasm with the Dhamma, because we know we've experienced it. And if we feel like we're getting bogged down, or it's just not moving, it's probably because we simply need to redouble our efforts into this moment, into what's occurring right here and right now. Thank you, Jen. Mary, how are you this morning?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. It is a lovely sutta. It feels like something you could put in your pocket.
Yeah.
Symbolically, you know, to just to keep with you. I mean, it's really great, simple guidance. It's very appropriate for everything we're experiencing right now. And it is a reminder that it's through the direct experience of you living your practice that you receive back that confirmation that
yeah.
you're on the path, going in the right direction. And that confirmation, you know, keeps the mind in the body so that you can be an example for others. And that,
yeah.
you know, even with everything that's going on, there's a lot of silver linings as well. And I think sometimes we miss that, you know, that in any period of great transformation, whether it's in your life or your work or the world, just like in practice, I mean, you know, we've talked about before, like the practice is like an elevator, you know, you can get out and you can go left, you can go right, yeah. You know, and one way is toward awakening and one way is not. So even with everything that's going on, we are in a period of transformation, and that's a very positive thing, or it can be. And each in our own, I don't mean to sound Pollyanna, but each in our own individual way, by living living the Dhamma and being on the path and, you know, resonating peacefulness in this environment has an effect on yourself, those around you. So it's a beautiful sutta. It's just the simplicity and the reminder. It's just really nice, and I appreciate everything everyone said. So thank you, John.
Thank you, Mary. Your girls are safe?
Yes. Yeah, they're actually both at home today.
Oh, but great.
They're very active in all the activities in Philadelphia. So, you know, we try not to worry.
Yeah. Well, tell them all I said hello.
I will. Thank you.
Good morning, Lorna. How are you?
I have to pop off, John.
It's good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Hi. It's funny I should follow on after Mary, because I was thinking more or less what she was thinking, that the changes that are occurring right now are opportunities. And it really just points to everything is impermanent. You know, the things we rely on, we think is life is this way. It isn't. It's just this way for a while, and then it changes.
Yep.
Impermanent. And that follows on, as I say, from what Mary was saying, that and with every change there is possibility of, you know, development. And so change is often, although we don't look forward to it in a lot of ways, it can be very positive, but we just don't know what's around the corner, so we kind of like a bit fearful of change. But I think knowing the Dharma and knowing and understanding the impermanence, that's just the way life is, and it's nothing to be fearful of. Even though it's change, it's not really to be fearful of it.
Well said.
And then I think the sutta that I agree with everybody, it's very practical, down to earth, and I think optimistic sutta. It points to optimism. If you follow the Eightfold Path, the Dharma, the Buddha's teachings, it's a very optimistic sutta, which I liked as well. I think that's all I have to say. Thank you. And thank you for the reading this morning, John. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, Lorna. Yeah, I mean, I see it. I see all the Buddha suttas as optimistic, because of there's not hope based in faith in his suttas. There's hope based in true refuge. That's a big difference, and something that we can see and we can feel it in the suttas. And so, in this sutta is the entire. I didn't really touch on it, but it's. You can see the Buddha's entire teaching method in this sutta too, meaning it's not just this positive, everything is wonderful, but because it's based in reality, his focus is on what's working and what's not working, because that's what we need to understand, what is ignorant and what is not ignorant. And that's the key theme to the Buddha's Dhamma, and it's present in every sentence of the Buddha's Dhamma. So there's always that comparison between what it is and what it isn't, because that's key to what's occurring right now. In this moment, what's key to maintain my own level of refined mindfulness is to know what I'm seeing through right view of what is reality and what isn't. And that's the constant struggle within our own minds. And that's the purity of this particular sutta, but all of them. So thank you for pointing out that the optimistic nature of this particular sutta, Lorna. Thank you. Let's go to Karen. Good morning, Karen. Good to see you.
Good morning, everybody. Good to be here. Sorry I had a conflict. I had another Zoom at 8:30 this morning.
Well, I'm glad you joined us a little bit anyway. How's your Dhamma practice?
Well, not so great. I've actually slacked off quite a bit and have been munching on a lot of potato chips and ice cream. So just looking at that and, you know, trying to find some understanding around that. But I'm sorry that I missed your talk on the sutta, and I look forward to later on today connecting to it and to the several weeks that I've missed. So, you know, just grateful that the Sangha is here and that you're here, and really wanting to continue. So that's really all I have to say. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Karen. So glad you joined us. And I'll get this posted in a couple hours. How are things going at Juan? I got your email, so it looks like we're on for November, et cetera.
It looks like it. At this point, yes, it does. They want to limit it to groups of no more than 20 at this point in time. But, you know, aside from two groups that are still sort of on the fence, small groups in July, everybody else is canceled.
Really?
Yeah, they all have.
Wow, so, surprise.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, things will change. We know that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have another group that's been in touch, and she might want to actually organize multiple small groups. So, you know, and then there's a question about whether to do yoga classes, and I don't know. There's just so many variables. It's hard to make a decision.
Yeah, it is, and the state governments aren't being real clear. I still don't quite follow what these different phases are, and I am going to check once more to make sure that we legally can meet again next Saturday, by the way. And if I find that we can, I will put it in the email. We're planning on opening up again, based on what I heard a couple of weeks ago, but now I'm not so sure. I think we're going to open up on Saturday, but just pay attention to the emails. Because, you know, I'm not, those of you that have listened to me, I'm not a 100% supporter of the lockdown. But we will follow the state guidelines. I think we have to do that. So anyway, I'm looking forward to continuing to see you online, but certainly see you in November.
Yes, me too.
Thanks for joining, Karen. Take care. Becky, how are you this morning?
Hi, John. Hi, everybody again. I'm good. Very happy to be here. I love this sutta like everyone else. I remember a few months ago when we were meeting in person, my lovely daughter talked about how fundamental mindfulness is in the Buddha teaching. And this, to me, this sutta is just a beautiful way of reiterating that. This sutta is, to me, is really about right mindfulness and refined mindfulness. And there are so many things that jumped out at me that I thought were very helpful. But no grasping is left in the mindful mind.
Yeah.
And what I find myself doing a lot still is trying to justify why do I feel like this, trying to figure it out rather than just being okay, just letting it go. And one of the things that Matt says that I find so helpful with that is he says, drop the story, stay with the feeling. And I find myself going back to that a lot, especially in my moment-to-moment life when I find myself trying to justify a feeling. So this sutta, again, was just like a poetic reminder of all those important kinds of mindfulness and how you get tripped up when you are, when you're living your moment-to-moment life and trying to stay on the path. So, thank you. I really enjoyed what everybody said, and it's wonderful to be here.
Thank you, Becky. You described the essence of the Dhamma, and it is just that immediate. You know, that's how we practice it. And again, I say this every class. It's remarkable how you know, at the level that you've all developed a Dhamma. You know, and one of the reasons why we have these discussions and Q&A sessions after a talk is because it lets me know if you're learning it, and you're all learning it. You know, you can tell by the questions and by your comments that what Becky just said again, and what we've all said, is referring to the immediacy of the Dhamma. It's right here and right now. It's not yesterday or the last minute or the next minute or tomorrow. It's right here and right now. It's the only way, and that's refined mindfulness. That's what the Buddha is referring to. So, thank you, Becky. Good morning, Ram. It's good to see you.
Good morning. Yeah, Jewel of a sutta. my eye lit on this first part where the wise are an island unto themselves that no flood can overwhelm. That just struck a chord with me. Yeah. How our seclusion helps us in mindfulness. And we keep that mindfulness of being harmless to ourselves and to all around us. So that the flood that's around us all the time is kept at bay. You know, we see the flood coming around us, and we realize that we're secluded from it.
Yeah. Through mindfulness.
Through mindfulness. I get the question a lot about, you know, do you teach mindfulness? They're always looking for this mindfulness that's really a distraction.
Yeah.
And at times it can be a hard sell to say, no, that's not the mindfulness that I can teach you. I can teach you a much more refined one, but it takes quite a bit more effort, and it's really part of a much larger thing. You know?
Yeah.
Then to teach mindfulness outside the Eightfold Path, as useful as it can be, I wouldn't even know how to teach it, because it's so different from what we've been doing here.
You bring up an interesting point about how to teach it. You can't. I mean, you know, it's really, if you're going to teach someone how to throw a baseball, you don't start with a football. You know, if you're going to teach someone how to practice a Dhamma, you don't start with something that's not the Dhamma, that's something else. But this sutta, or this section from the Dhammapada, refers to that again and again, just like all the suttas. You know, this one is very clear about it's this and not that. It's in every sentence in this particular sutta, but that, again, that's an underlying theme of the Dhamma, and it's an underlying theme of the Dhamma because it's singularly important to recognize, yes, this is what I'm here to hold in mind as a human being, and this is something that's not useful for me as a human being. That's all it is. So, and that helps eliminate all the rites and rituals that the Buddha cautioned against too, as a way of thinking that the rite or the ritual has more power than understanding. In other words, if I bow a certain way for a long enough period of time, that will somehow develop awakening within me because it's somehow got recognized by some external agency. When you think about it, and these are the things I started thinking about probably way too young, but it just doesn't hold up. It doesn't make any sense. How can that be? Because it can't be, you know?
Yeah, we've both done it long enough the wrong way to recognize that it's just not working. And that actually brings you to the last part of this sutta, where he will say, you know, if you do it this way, if you follow the Eightfold Path carefully and consistently, you will not lose the way.
Yep.
And that optimism is wonderful. I remember spending, you know, way too much time, and the people around me in my previous practices spending way too much time, you know, thinking about when is this awakening, when is this enlightenment going to happen, you know, or are, you know, is this guy enlightened, is this person enlightened, it's just nonsense. Here we know that if we stay on the path, we will not lose the way.
But there was a time, Ram, when it wasn't nonsense to you, was it? I remember a talk we had at One Dharma Center, I think 7 years ago now, specifically about the Eightfold Path. And at the time, you were probably practicing for a couple of years, I think, at least 18 months, and you were talking about how difficult it was for you to integrate the Eightfold Path, but now you have, and your entire view has changed, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I mean, Ram is just such a good example. We all are, but Ram is such a good example of what it means to integrate the Eightfold Path and what it looks like. You know, complete change in the way we look at ourselves and the world. Thank you, Ram. Hello, Josh. Good to see you.
Well, good to see you. Good to see everybody. I really enjoyed the sutta. For some reason, I've been thinking how wonderful it was for the Buddha to kind of be so comfortable in his own skin. And he did it by getting rid of the self.
Yep.
And for a guy who's very shy all my life and self-conscious all the time, I'm beginning to realize what an obstacle that has been for me to overcome, and probably still is. I begin to understand that if I can become eightfold conscious instead of self-conscious, it's going to be help out.
Yeah. It should be of benefit.
That's all I got. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you, Josh. And it is just that. Again, you're talking about the it's either eightfold consciousness, beautiful line, or self-consciousness. The essence of the Buddha's Dhamma. It's the essence of addiction and compulsive behavior. It's the essence of all the ills of humanity. And again, this isn't supposed to be a salvific religion. The Buddha never intended that. It's just supposed to bring understanding, individual understanding of what it means to be a human being. And to some, that would sound like, who cares about that? That's everything. All of our confusion, all of our bad moves as a society come from a lack of understanding, don't they? And so we are, you know, again, this is an opportunity for great change. And as Dhamma practitioners, we can be the example of ongoing change in a peaceful way, because that's what an awakened human mind is. It has that ability to withstand the constant change and uncertainty of the world without losing itself. Again, that's what this little sutta talks about, but that's the entire Dhamma. And isn't it wonderful that we are actually developing it and feeling the benefits of it? We know that this is something that actually works for us. Well, each and every one of us has experienced that measure of calm and peace. It comes through the Dhamma. Another remarkable class. Is any other questions or comments before we conclude with metta? Okay, and just again, we're planning on having our first class back in Frenchtown next Saturday. The Tuesday classes will continue live stream only for at least another couple of weeks, probably a month or so. But just to, you know, Josh wasn't clear about this, and just so everybody knows that our classes will always be live streamed, no matter what, whether we're in Frenchtown or not, like we always have. So, and again, the if there's any change in Saturday's class, it will be in Thursday's email, so just check it. But we're planning on being back next Saturday. All right, we'll finish with metta, as we always do. The Buddhist words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class this morning. Peace. Well, let me just end the recording, and I got a question for y'all. You could hold on for a second. One of the email I put the guidelines that we're going to have for establishing our meetings, it begins with, before we come to class, that we all take our temperature. Is that a reasonable thing to ask you all to do? Yes, no? Does anybody have a problem with it?
I'm not quite sure how effective it would be as far as in the whole scheme to catch but, you know, it's a doable thing.
Well, as part of our entire strategy, I think it's kind of the last thing. And they're coming out now, the world, the WHO, maybe not a completely believable organization, did come out and finally admitted that asymptomatic spread is nearly impossible. And then they came back and they came back on it. The point I'm trying to make is with everything else that we're doing, including that, we should have a lot of confidence that we're meeting safely. You know, we're also going to be wearing masks, but, you know, I think that to me, that would be the most important thing. I think they should have said a long time ago that if you have a fever, stay home and stay away from people. But it's not the only thing that we're doing. And I think that as long as you all feel comfortable doing that, which I think you do, that's what we're going to do.
You know,
and we'll have our natural distancing that, you know, even if we have our Zabutons right next to each other, there's still 3 feet between us, and we'll be farther apart than that. We won't sit, you know, we have our chairs are right next to each other. They won't be right next to each other. So we're gonna act in a responsible, reasonable way that I think everybody will be safe. But if you don't feel safe, then join us on Zoom until you do, you know. Karen, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was just gonna offer to share with you a draft safety protocol sheet that I did for Juan. They're still working on finalizing it, but it might help.
Please.
Sure, be happy to.
Anybody else? Becky.
Do we have to let you know we're coming? I mean, make a reservation or anything? Or
no. I thought about that, and it's just kind of it's too cumbersome for one thing. I don't think we're going to have. We can comfortably fit 20 people. I don't think we're going to have more.
Okay. All right.
But if we do, we probably will have to ask latecomers to either wait, like either go home, or the other thought I had, if we have a few people that are over our limit, whatever we feel is comfortable, they could gather on the porch and we just open the windows. They can still hear it, and we're separated. They're outside. So it'll all work out. We're gonna, you know, it'll be like everything in the world. It's a work in progress. So we may get there and decide, well, we got 18 people and that's enough. And, you know, but right now that's what my thinking is. And we also have to remember that this is just for the next few weeks too. Eventually, you know, we're all going to be out of lockdown, and we'll just be back to a normal lives, maybe wearing masks, maybe not, but...
You're planning to bring some of the people into the what is now the waiting room?
Well, I think we'll use it to, you know, to establish social distancing.
Okay.
You know, again, we're gonna see what it is. If maybe we'll find out that it's 16 is a number, but you know, we'll find out. I think we can fit 20. You know, but again, I don't think reservations are necessary. I think you know it'll take care of itself. We very rarely have classes over 20. I thought that maybe the first class or the first few classes back we will, but I think there's still enough people that are too concerned to go out that will keep the numbers down that way. So,
right.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it though. I miss the physical sangha. This has been wonderful for 3 months, but I'd like to see you physically again soon. All right, I didn't take my dog out earlier. I got to run my dog. He's been very patient. We will continue with Tuesday night, so I hope to see you all on Tuesday. So.
All right.
Peace.
Thanks, Ben.
See you all.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.